We're in an Airbnb in Santa Clara.
Yeah, we flew to Santa Clara for their turn week of climate action events and just got done with a really neat recording of the podcast mm-hmm. with a Santa Clara student and a small audience. And it was really neat. I'm still kind of processing this whole day.
That's how I felt too.
What stuck out to you in that hour or so we were recording?
Yeah, I think the dynamic switched a little bit of us doing an interview to us having a conversation, which it always feels conversational, but it did feel like there was more, kind of more onus on us to carry it, which was fun and a little bit of a new challenge, I think, for me especially. But our co-host Petra, who's a student at Santa Clara, was great, and she did a lot of research and came away with like some good that's what I'm looking for, good critiques of the film, which mm-hmm. I appreciated, and just brought kind of a new and different lens, which I liked.
Yeah, I think there's no perfect film, mm-hmm. and this is not a perfect film, but the fact that we talked for an hour about it and we're going to put something about the film on the internet forever means that there's another contribution to a bigger conversation.
That's true.
Which I think is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good day. I'm glad we did this.
Me too. It feels like it's 10 p.m. and also 10 a.m. at the same time.
Yes, it does. So enjoy. Hopefully you cannot tell that we're fatigued in the podcast. But it's a good fatigue.
Yes.
Yeah.
The good kind of tired.
The good kind of tired.
Yes.
All right. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Welcome to the Inbalance Podcast. My name is Kelsey Solberg, and I am the Director of Professional and Community Education at Gonzaga. Inbalance animates Gonzaga University's CREATE model for sustainability through interviews and conversations with students, staff, faculty, and community members practicing sustainability on campus and in our region. CREATE stands for Care for Creation, Reflection, Experience, Action, Teaching, and Engagement. These six areas help frame and animate our sustainability work at Gonzaga. And we're so excited to be recording our first ever live podcast. We're currently at Santa Clara University for their Turn 6 event. I'm here with my co-host Jim Simon, the Director of Sustainability at Gonzaga, as well as our new friend Petra Glenn, a student here at Santa Clara. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Petra, we'd love to hear a little bit more about you, and then maybe if you want to tell us a little bit about the event we're at, about TURN.
Sure, yeah. I'm a junior here at Santa Clara. I'm majoring in political science and economics, and I'm currently an intern for an organization here on campus called TURN, which is a week-long climate convention that's going on this week. We have headliners Monday through Friday, basically different headliner every hour, ranging from various subjects have to do with the climate crisis, and this podcast is one of the headliners, so we're so glad you're here. I'm also the president of a climate club on campus called Sunrise, and so I'm excited to talk about this movie today. Yeah.
We're really glad to be here, and thanks for your leadership on campus and in your community.
Sounds good. Should we describe the movie?
Yeah. Who has seen the movie? I guess we're transcending multiple mediums.
Three mediums.
Yeah. So one person in the audience, in the two, room. Three, four people, five kind of, have seen the film, which is exciting. I think Kelsey and I watched it again this weekend. Mm-hmm. Petra, did you watch it to prep for this?
I did. I've watched it a
fresh
few times.
Okay.
So it's fresh. Do you want to describe the beginning of the film for those that haven't seen it?
Sure, yeah. So it starts with two scientists that discover a huge asteroid directly headed towards Earth, which is basically going to hit Earth and probably destroy humanity. And so they head to the White House to inform governmental officials about the issue.
That's a great summary. Yeah. So then I'm going to talk a little bit about the middle of the film. So as so Meryl Streep is actually playing our president in this film, and chaos sort of ensues once it's found out at that level what's going on, and there's media chaos, so conspiracy theories, there's gifts, everything's kind of going wild. And the U.S. government eventually decides to launch a mission to set the comet off of its path. And it turns around partway through. So it kind of initiates an even more chaos as people start to wonder what's going to happen. And they find out that there's actually $140 trillion worth of rare minerals on the comet. And so then it turns into kind of an investment for people to actually kind of retrieve the comet. And there's a lot of denial, so there's people who don't believe that it's real, people who do, and eventually we see the comet, it becomes visible as it gets close enough, and that's kind of when our namesake for the movie comes in. So everyone's encouraging everyone to look up at the comet, and then there's a whole slew of people who are saying don't look up, so it's kind of this disbelief that's happening.
Yeah, and that kind of begins the kind of final third of the film, kind of the despair when the options to make the comet go away through explosion don't work, does not work. And so there's this kind of question of what do we do now when we know that the end is near? And that's where this, for those that are not present and are listening to the podcast, we're sitting at a table that is set for, some might say like a Last Supper. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my favorite scenes of the film is where family and friends come together and kind of recollect what it was like to be human for just a few more minutes. And then things end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were kind of first reactions for both of you to the film?
I think I just remember thinking, like, yes. This is how I kind of feel about the crisis and like the absurdity of, you know, everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. I think it really, obviously that's the main purpose of the movie, is to point out, you know, how absurd our collective denial of the climate crisis is. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really captures that feeling that you have at the end of the movie when it turns to despair. Mm-hmm.
Found myself laughing and then being upset that I was laughing. Mm-hmm. Because it was so real and relatable. Yeah, they did a good job casting. Mm-hmm. And it was the right amount of there was the right amount of humor, and also kind of like we need to do something about this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was kind of that, like, teetering back and forth between humor and then darkness or reality. Uh-huh. It's just sort of this back and forth. And then eerily familiar is sort of what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. You both sort of touched on that, but just everything that, how complicated it became for something that was seemingly really simple. So, like, let's look at this and sort of accept it, but then it turned into, there's just so many other factors at play and power and money and everything that gets sort of mixed into to all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do we think that the film leads us to understand the need for climate action? Is it an effective tool for that?
I kind of have mixed feelings about, you know, how it really addresses the climate crisis. But I think, like, at the core, it's really pointing out the need for action. I don't know if really describes the action that's needed or who it comes from or why. But I think the main message that you can take away from it is that inaction is not the solution.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like as I was thinking about this question about who's watching this film, and mm-hmm. it started to make me feel like maybe, you know, does it help us to understand the need for climate action? I think probably for people who already believe there to mm-hmm. be that need. So people who are watching it are maybe already, you know, maybe becoming more emboldened, but anyone who maybe doesn't have an interest in it probably wouldn't find themselves watching this film. Mm-hmm. So I almost have almost a concern that, like, maybe it's creating more division. Maybe mm-hmm. It's kind of foreshadowing for us in a way that we might just fall into, kind of that division.
almost like a film for a movement instead of a film for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the second time I watched it, I was with my parents, and they both really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the movie, I was like, yeah, that's the climate crisis for you. And they were like, what? It's about an asteroid. And I was like, oh my gosh.
There's a metaphor.
And so I think even for people who are more like moderate about, you know, the climate crisis, it's hard to be like, this is who the movie is for. Because it's, you know, really pointing a finger at, like, one side mm-hmm. of the country, basically, rather than something that needs to be addressed by everyone.
Yeah.
And isn't addressed by the, you know, the other party that isn't, you know, the one being attacked in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even playing into a lot of the stereotypes, I think, that mm-hmm. might exist between, you know, different parties, just in, like, the demographics of and how people were portrayed, I think, could be cause for some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for anyone that would be even as extreme as a climate denier, watching a movie like that, if they were even to choose to watch the movie, you know, after hearing what everyone has to say about it, it doesn't, you know, I don't think anyone that supported the Trump administration would watch that movie and be like, yes, I understand. Mm-hmm. You know, when the entire movie is really pointing a finger at them and, you know, kind of making fun of the absurdity that that administration was. So I think it really closes off to half the country when, you know, we need more unison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a limit to that absurdity, because I remember there was a scene in the film where it was when they started looking up and they were at a rally for the, I guess, don't look uppers. Is that what we would call them?
The what?
The don't look uppers.
Oh, yeah.
I made up the term.
That's good.
And that was when you could see the asteroid in the sky. And he said something like, one of the attendees of the rally said something like, I can see it. What were they were fooling me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that scene, that tangible piece, I wonder how much you can fool people if you can see things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes when it's hard to see the impacts of the climate crisis, in the moment that people are in, that but if people were able to see it more tangibly, mm-hmm. maybe they'd choose a different path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting too, because the film's on essentially a 6-month timeline, right? So they find out, you know, that this is going to be happening. We have about 6 months, and thinking about the, you know, our length of time in our real world crisis versus maybe the length of time that they're given, but even still, like, the lack of urgency maybe that exists, and how there's still, you know, watching, like, people are putting out these commercials, which is like, I'm worried about my job, you know, is the comet going to provide me a job? And it's like this very interesting way of people sort of starting or like trying to navigate around this this thing that does seem intangible, and then once it does become visible, I mean, everything, all hell breaks loose. I mean, there's, you know, people rioting and panicking and fleeing and all these things.
Yeah, I think that's kind of maybe more of the accurate part of, you know, the analogy between the asteroid and the climate crisis, is that so many people just don't believe what they can't see
and
is intangible in front of them. But in a way, it kind of makes you like more panicked regarding the climate crisis.
Yeah.
We can already see the effects is already happening. And yet, you know, we still have people that are just adamantly, you know, trying not to have sustainable change in order to, you know, improve.
Yeah.
And then it's a question of what does it take?
Mm-hmm.
If not an asteroid or that vision of something so cataclysmic, what will it be?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, where do you think that misses the mark? Like that metaphor of the asteroid versus what we're like currently facing. How do you see those maybe not lining up?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is that, well, I mean, there's kind of two. Like the asteroid isn't like human caused, whereas the climate crisis is.
Yeah.
And so it's not just a question of what do we do about this asteroid headed towards us? It's everyday actions created this problem, and now we also have to solve the problem.
Mm.
So I think that's probably the biggest issue. Also, there's the solution is much more like complex, I think. Whereas, you know, pointing towards the government, like if they had just done the original plan to begin with, the issue would have been solved. Mm-hmm. Whereas within the climate crisis, it's not just up to the government. Mm-hmm. It's up to the collective.
Yeah. So that's kind of where that power lies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
Mm-hmm. And what you mentioned too about where it's rooted, I think that was something I didn't think about with the, because in the film it's sort of us versus the asteroid. It's mm-hmm. all of us collectively versus this thing that's kind of happening to us. Whereas, you know, in our real life situation, it's us versus each other and ourselves, and you know, there's so many other kind of factors at play. And yeah, we're caused a lot more. It's just more complex, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there's how instantaneous the consequences of the asteroid will be. So we know it's, you know, T-minus 6 months, like this is happening, and then it's sort of this quick and easy kind of out. And I think it, you know, on our end too, it's feeling like that's going to be really drug out, and then how disproportionately people would be impacted as we get closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just all of humankind being on the same playing field. I mean, it really is, you know, people being affected at different times and at different severities, and over a longer amount of time. So it feels more like painful in that way, the real life crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what most critics like had an issue with, especially environmentalists, was the lack of even talking about nature and that really important aspect of the climate crisis. You know, like the whole, like, you know, it paints this picture of the media and everyone being so invested in these like kind of meaningless things like celebrity news, and you know, rather than focusing on this issue at hand of the asteroid,
mm-hmm.
which is accurate. But it never addresses, like, why are we that way?
Hmm.
You know, why are we so invested in consumption and only putting value on things that we can consume? And this imbalance that we have right now within our society of not putting, you know, gratitude in earth and relationships. Hmm. And I think kind of the end of the movie, when they're all around the table like this, and Dr. Mindy says, we really did have everything, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it's kind of painting this, not just them at dinner and their relationships, but also humanity in general.
Mm-hmm.
We do have everything, you know, that we need, and we have this imbalance. And so I think that needed to be touched on more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the issue that we have as a society, you know, of consumerism and, you know, exploitation and, you know, what caused the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That seems like, for me, because I felt like it was subtle, that kind of commentary on consumption. And I wonder what the role of film and art is in confronting the climate crisis, because if it's not front and center and there's room for ambiguity, maybe it's not the right medium to communicate the importance of addressing the climate crisis. Because if in some ways, maybe the three of us or the, you know, 20 of us in this room watched 20 different films
mm-hmm.
because of how we viewed it through our own lived experiences. So I wonder, is film and art the right medium to use?
I think for the reason you just stated, that we all might have experienced, you know, 30 different films, I think that is part of what makes it a good medium,
yeah.
potentially. You know, I think we'll all sort of come to it with our own lived experience, and then hopefully from that there is still this desire to act, or the feeling of a need to act, and then doing that in our own kind of unique ways potentially. But I also do think it runs the risk of it maybe falling flatter for a lot of people. You know, like you mentioned, your parents being like, what was this movie about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that might be a lot of people's experience with it too, if they don't come in sort of like with that lens at all. So I guess it's kind of a double-edged sword, but yeah, what's your sense of that?
I mean, I totally agree that, you know, art and film have a huge role to play within the climate crisis. I think both of those mediums reflect our, like, reality and, you know, what's happening. And, you know, those things also contribute to education and other really important aspects of, like, really understanding the climate crisis, and how it intersects with every, you know, aspect of our life. So I think it has a big role to play, I think. But it's, you know, it's hard to control, you know, the art and films that are put out there. And, yeah. you know, are they giving an accurate read of the situation and what needs to be done? Mm-hmm. It's yeah. a hard balance.
Yeah, if there's anything that comes close to being a universal language, it's probably art. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think it probably has a role going forward mm-hmm. In that way.
Yeah. For each of you personally, what kind of moments in the film really kind of forced you to confront that this is about the climate crisis, you know, this film? Like, what were the really deep connections that you both made during the film? Jim's laughing.
I think it was the scene that we're sitting at, this yeah. table, mm-hmm. because it was so final. I think family and friends are important to me, and so it's emotional to think of being in that moment when you have detached yourself from any ability to do anything, mm-hmm. and that's where you go, is to family and friends and set a table. And to bring a potluck dinner together and make it. I think that was just a really kind of a punch in the gut. Mm-hmm. Also the scene of them escaping in a ship. Mm-hmm. That like always there's a way out, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's to go to Mars in a Tesla or whether it's going to some planet
yeah.
where the president gets eaten by an alien. it's just... That's the kind of like dry humor that it's like, of course, yeah. of course they're gonna try to find a way out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the wealthy, those with yes. wealth and power that are able mm-hmm. to make that escape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I think the question's kind of hard because I knew like going into the movie that this is about the climate crisis, and so you know, it's not like there was like a moment that it dawned on me. Mm-hmm. But I think I would agree that the end scene really helps put it in. To perspective, kind of like what I talked about earlier of, you know, the entire movie is so absurd and reflects that absurd reality, but to reflect at the end of like, okay, what do I think of the climate crisis? What can mm-hmm. I do? What do I value? And hopefully, you know, how do I, you know, change my actions mm-hmm. to do better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Kelsey?
Yeah, I think we're all coming to a similar point. There was also a little bit of a lead up to the dinner scene. So our main characters were, you know, driving to Leo DiCaprio's home in Michigan, and Jennifer Lawrence is in the front seat. Those are our two main characters, and they know that at the moment that they're making this drive, there's sort of this last ditch effort happening mm-hmm. for them to destroy the asteroid, for the president and her, you know, cohort to destroy the asteroid. And so they all know that that's happening, but they're not watching. They're driving, they're listening to music. Jennifer Lawrence gets proposed to in the car. It's this really sweet moment of like love and joy. And there's also some sorrow there too. And then they, you know, they're at the grocery store and, you know, they're like, we should get fingerling potatoes. I love fingerling potatoes. I guess they're trying to decide what meal to make. So it's just like this really sweet, simple moments, and it's all happening as, you know, as everyone's realizing that this last ditch effort really failed, and that this really is the end. And then they go and they all have this meal together, and they're sharing memories, and they're laughing and praying and drinking wine, and it's just a very, it's kind of like all those little good pieces of humanity kind of tucked into this last few minutes. And I love that they sort of just remove themselves from watching everything else that's going on. And yeah, so it is a little bit of that feeling of escape maybe, and also just like coming back to what matters. Yeah, so that stood out.
Hmm. What do you think some of the weaknesses of the film were?
Do you have a list? Let's hear it.
I mean, I kind of already touched on, you know, the main one of this disconnect between like nature and mm-hmm. that balance of humanity and only placing value on consumptible goods and things like that. You know, when like kind of reading the different criticisms of the film, I think many different activists really touched on the lack of diversity and whatnot within the film. You know, it's a very Western perspective. And at the center of the climate crisis and climate justice is really, you know, this aspect of indigenous leadership and, you know, land back and stewardship and, you know, that really being a primary thing we need to focus on in order to address, you know, this imbalance that's been caused. And so in the film, there's only like one scene where they show, you know, indigenous person like dancing while the asteroid's hitting Earth. And it's just a weird way of, I guess, connecting the indigenous community that they kind of sum up all together to nature without like showing them as this like collective, like people and activists and scientists and like members of our community that are at the head of, you know, the climate justice movement. Yeah, and, you know, pretty popular environmentalist Mandy Bala kind of had a piece regarding that and the lack of, you know, non-Western perspective and lack of indigenous perspective. And so, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I wrote down that the asteroid was like a free pass, that it just, and I think as we talked about earlier, it doesn't address, kind of on both ends of the feedback loop, our ability to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the asteroid, it's like binary. It's going to cause massive and inextricable harm. I don't know why I chose that word to say, but I did. Massive harm to the planet, change things forever, whereas climate change will do something similar, but there's an opportunity to do something about it. I think you touched on that. So I think it was, I don't know, it was a free pass to kind of go down an apocalyptic, go on a ride to the apocalypse that maybe isn't as accurate as climate change is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there was a level of, it was really simplistic, right? I mean, it took a very simple thing that was about to happen and it kind of built the story around that. And there's only so much you can do in a 2-hour film. And I think really with its, like, its commentary so much on the Western perspective and sort of our interpretation and experience of this as a global crisis. But there's hardly, I was thinking as you were talking, Petra, like there's hardly any even moments where we hear of any other, you know, members of our global community being engaged in this. There's that moment when they're at kind of at their look up headquarters as they're trying to get people, you know, kind of in these last weeks and months of before it hits, and they learn that, you know, that these other missions had failed. So they said something about like a Russian mission and a Chinese mission that both failed, and but it was partially because the U.S. had pulled out of those. So that was really the only moment that we heard of other efforts that were happening. And then there was sort of that end scene as the asteroid makes impact and you see people from all over the world, you know, like the madness that's sort of beginning to happen. And those were really the only moments where we got out of the U.S. and able to really zoom out. So I think that was probably on purpose in a sense. I don't know that it was right, but I do think that there was some intention there, because it really was focused so much on like how does this culture that we're in, this subculture that we're in, like handle this, and it's not well.
Yeah.
I will say
yeah I think it all just kind of goes back to whether or not the asteroid is like the correct you know, like allegory or analogy for the climate crisis. So I think, yeah, we talked about it earlier, it's very digestible, you know, like we need to act. But I just, yeah, I just don't really think that to really further someone's understanding of the climate crisis, this is just leading, you know, someone to of like, well, what do I even do about it?
Yeah.
You know, since the end is just so full of despair, it's this weird line between like satire and advocacy. You know, it's pointing, you know, kind of making a point of like pointing this out, but not really leaving the person watching with any tangible thing to like take away. Like, what do we do? I mean, I think the director's other works, like The Big Short and Vice, more effectively, you know, point out who's at fault. Whereas, you know, I don't really know if this one simple analogy about the asteroid is really effectively describing the climate crisis. Like we talked about earlier, like, who is this for? You know, most people that are really enjoying the movie are already more so knowledgeable about it. And so when it's leaving out the really, the complexity of the issue, how are people that aren't as knowledgeable about it getting that information?
Yeah. In any of the, as you were looking at some of like the critiques of it, were there other, did people pose other metaphors that could have been used or other kind of like lenses through which to look through, just out of curiosity?
Not so much. Okay. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a hard thing to sum up. Yeah. In 2 hours. And yeah. I think the discussion of just, well, what is the purpose of the film?
Yeah.
And, you know, it isn't to completely sum up the climate crisis.
Right.
Just interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
Yeah. So talking about what the right way to communicate this is or is not, do you think this film did more or less for our collective society than a film like An Inconvenient Truth from former Vice President Al Gore, where much like Don't Look Up didn't present solutions and science and facts, An Inconvenient Truth did so almost to the opposite fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I distinctly remember watching the film, seeing Al Gore speak, and it almost being in contrast to this, being about science and solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Is one better than the other? Are they both good? I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Petra?
I'm not sure. That's a difficult question.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that people that watch this movie would then take this interest and then, you know, do their own research.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, obviously, like, that's, you know, the purpose. So maybe a film like this might spark more of realizing how absurd the situation is. I keep using that word, like, the absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way that's, yeah, more, you know, more, you know, audiences can really enjoy it and spark that interest. I'm not sure. What is your thought?
Yeah. Well, I like that you were just like, both.
Yeah.
You should go from one to the other. I think
mm-hmm.
that's a great way, because it is, you know, I think both are important and both have their kind of their strong, you know, or their strengths, really. So if we think about, you know, Don't Look Up, I think it is digestible. I think you use that word, which is great. It's something that's easy. I can just queue it up on Netflix and it's really kind of low barriers. But trying to digest a film like Inconvenient Truth, I think offers a lot more challenges. And I think trying to make sense of that can prove to be a little bit more insurmountable for people, and maybe a little bit scarier. So maybe the fact that if we kind of like code it in some humor and a great cast, that maybe somebody can, you know, we can more easily digest it. I don't know what that says about us, but I don't know. I think it's got to be a little bit of both. I don't know how you combine them, though.
I don't either. Maybe watch one and the other.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that.
A marathon. Climate change films.
And I know there was some discussion about, you know, does this film just create more of the reality that they're trying to point out?
Yeah.
You know, people are then focusing on the actors were so great and the love life of Leonardo DiCaprio. And, you know, suddenly, you know, the film isn't even about what it's about anymore. It's about, you know, the media and, you know, things that it's trying to point out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel like those important messages can just get lost when a film like Don't Look Up is so, you know, has the big names and, you know, it's already like, it's a part of that media that they're trying to ridicule.
Yeah.
Yeah, it becomes sort of diluted,
mm-hmm.
the message.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of ways, at the end of the day, we're the ones we've been waiting for, and so we can use the film as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important to note, that the film is there, it's a piece of work. And there's bits and pieces we can take from it. We don't have to say it's good, it's all bad, it's all good. We can say it's there. Some people are gonna react to it in a really positive way that might inspire them to participate and to take action. Other people will just fire up the next film in their Netflix queue and watch something else. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. But I think we have the ability to take control and to do something about what we notice and how that makes us feel.
Mm. We're the ones we're waiting for, is that what you said?
Yeah.
I like that.
It's someone else said that.
Yeah.
It's not me.
An official quote by Jim Simon.
Petra, I think you sort of touched on this a little bit about the apathy that might kind of come from a film like this. So we see it in the characters, right? And then, but how do you think that might kind of promote more apathy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we... I think we touched on, spoiler alert, at the end. The film ends with everyone dying unless they're on the rocket ship to a different planet. And so, yeah, you're kind of left with this feeling of, like, dread, I guess, of, geez, you know, humanity is doomed. And so, yeah, I think, kind of talked about it earlier, this, like, weird difference between, like, advocacy and satire and, like, making fun of the situation, but also trying to prose, like, here's what we do about it. And so I just don't know if the film, given the fact that it's not accurately portraying this crisis as something that's man-made and solvable by individuals and not just governments, is it really leaving the message of change? Or is it leaving the message of, we're doomed, the government is so absurd, and everything is controlled by money and profit, and what do we do about it? You know, is that last scene where they're talking about humanity and gratitude and focusing on things that are important, you know, is that really leaving that message effectively?
Mm-hmm.
And so my hope is that people watch it and then feel further motivation. So I don't think it only promotes more apathy, but I definitely think just the analogy definitely can. It just depends.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think, like we talked about before, it's what you make of it. So it could create more apathy. I didn't watch the credits until the very, very end to see if there's like a website to visit, and I'm mm-hmm. guessing there is not. I don't know if you watched to the very end.
Okay.
But like, again, it's about our ability to take action, mm-hmm. and so recognizing that we have agency to do something about it. So if the film moved you and you happen to have the resources and the privilege to do something about it, then maybe that's we're called to do that,
mm-hmm.
if
mm-hmm.
we have the ability to.
What do we do about it?
That's a good question. I know Turn likes concrete actions and things to do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any QR codes like the fantastic previous presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should get involved and not just, not only organizing, but get appointed to positions on boards that help make decisions in your community. Run for council seats, run for positions on fire boards and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
Because we need to be the decision makers in our community. I think that's a huge thing that we can do if we're able to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I loved is that, you know, with this event being called Turn, and then the film, you know, their whole campaign is Look Up. Like, it really is this, are you willing to just sort of face what
mm-hmm.
is happening? And I think that that's, you know, maybe the first step in this is really being willing to sit with it, sit with the reality, and kind of learn what we are facing, and then kind of thinking creatively about what's my way to contribute. So Jim just named a number of really lovely ways that you can become involved and take action. And I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where everyone's sort of going to interpret this differently, and hopefully then they internalize it differently and their actions all look different, because we do need this to be such a widespread movement, and art should absolutely be involved, and so should, you know, government action and so many other things. And so really just understanding what are we faced with, and what's my unique way to sort of combat it, and it's all about coalitions and community and coming together in all this. And
I agree. I think in the most like literal sense, the movie tells you to listen to scientists. listen to scientists. And just this past week, thousands of scientists were, you know, protesting after the IPCC reports. Mm-hmm. And so this is such a reality. So I think listening to scientists, also in the literal sense of the movie, elect government officials that believe scientists and have strong climate plans. And then also just those individual actions you can take. Coming to Turn Week, taking that first step of becoming knowledgeable. I think those are all really important things.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For Santa Clara students, there's a plethora of ways to get involved. From Coming to Turn Week, there's really amazing organizations on campus that focus on it. For anyone watching, the Good Market happens on Friday at Santa Clara from 12 to 3 that you can come learn more about it. So, yeah, there are good concrete actions to be taken.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we have a very cool opportunity to have some others in the room with us, some of which I know have seen the film. And so we'd actually love if there were questions or things we didn't touch on, if anyone wants to throw anything out or ask a question. Zoom audience as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd love if you're here in person, if you'd like to join us at the table.
Come sit with us for dinner.
We have a banana and some bread for you.
And an empty bottle of Martinelli's, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think it's fascinating. You touched on the topic of it's all about consumerism. And I've read in the past where the factories spew out so much pollution every day just making consumer goods. And people are worried about driving electric versus gas-powered cars, but really driving a car is just like a drop in the bucket compared to the pollution that's been created by factories and production. So it really is like, I think, information and getting the word out to people that it's all this massive consumerism, mm-hmm. and wanting to buy a new laptop every year and having to buy a new laptop every year instead of just changing out a chip with a faster processor. It's just these companies are doing all of this to increase profitability, but if people were aware that this is what's causing the need to have the factories through the pollution and getting that information out to people, because that's something that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. You know, they want to do solar, but then those solar panels lead to polluting the earth mm-hmm. when life is done. So there's just so much information that people kind of need to be aware of. And if there were just a way to get the information out to people, so that, you know, just stop. It's not just about using, you know, recyclable cups and not using plastic, but it's about just this whole lifestyle thing that as the world gets more westernized and people expect, I guess it's how do you get that information out to people to dial it back?
So I think that was a comment on what's the story behind the things that we have and how do we make sure that the full story of even so-called solutions is told. What do we think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just goes back to like the underlying message that isn't addressed throughout the movie of why are we like this? The movie really touches on this company that is, you know, trying to solve it in like this profitable way. But the company, you know, does kind of have this aim of like, this is also good for the environment and kind of like greenwashing of, you know, capitalism that still has that underlying message of what we value most is what we consume. And so getting the word out, it just can't come from these businesses and, you know, we can't allow it to be like greenwashed. It has to come from like the collective and, you know, these grassroots organizations and really organizing within your local communities and things like that and focusing on accurate, unbiased information. And I think listening to scientists, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're touching on one of our biggest challenges, and it's such a blessing how much information we have at our fingertips, and mm-hmm. yet at the same time I can approach something seemingly neutral and do two different internet searches, one being totally for it and the other being totally against it, and I can be constantly validated in whatever that extreme opinion is. Like, I'll always be able to sort of find what I'm looking for. And so even just the, it's like battle of information and what's correct and who do we believe, and there's so many different stakeholders in all of these, and it gets wrapped up in power and wealth and yeah, it can be messy and dangerous. And I, if there was, like, would love it if there was just one medium that everybody trusted and we could all go to that and that was our truth. But we're living in very, yeah, polarized times.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it can be tough to know what to do if mm-hmm. everything that you're trying to do is questioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so picking something and feeling as good as you can about it and doing that thing is a good first step.
Yeah.
Hi.
Disclaimer, I have not watched the film, but I'm very intrigued to watch it now.
Good.
So
we did something right.
A cataclysmic event like the asteroid in Don't Look Up has a way of bringing people together. What would it take to bring people in unison against climate change? Is it enough to combat it individually? Or, like in parallel to the film, would it have to be some catastrophic event to create action collectively? Mm.
That's the question.
That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be collective. There's really no way around it. It can't just stem from individuals. You know, even if we all hardcore committed to recycling and, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, like the first questioner pointed out, it's institutions and corporations that are also, you know, the drivers of climate change. So it has to be collective. It can't just be individual. But I think obviously those two things like go hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree. I think if we're collectively trying to liberate people from suffering, whatever way that looks,
mm-hmm.
It frees people up to be joyful and to be caring and to think about that collective spirit that we're part of something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's work that takes all of us.
I think the, you know, part of what you're getting at is a little bit of what we talked about, how that sort of falls short, that metaphor, in that it becomes outside of us and almost outside of our control. Because really in the film, it's sort of left up to the, you know, the powers that be, so to say, to kind of do something about it, and everyone's left sort of waiting. And there's not a lot of action that's able to be taken at that level. And so I think that it does have to be both, and like Jim said, sort of with in the mind of collective and wellness and like life for humanity. And it's just not really it's hard to do that when we're the problem, you know? Yeah.
But I also think we can kind of take hope in knowing that there's so many people out there who are devoted to this cause, and, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
change happening and people are talking about it. And so I think getting lost in that, oh my gosh, it has to take the collective, but we're never going to turn this situation around. You know, we can't get lost in that, and really have to appreciate what's been done already and the work that's been going on.
Yeah.
You know, on your question, does it take a catastrophic event? I feel like it was a horrendous thing to happen to the world, but COVID was a catastrophic event that
yeah.
made everybody stop in their tracks, right? I mean, no one went to work, the factory shut down, the thing. So the world decided to stop because of that event. So, you know, maybe it does take a catastrophic event, in my opinion, such as that,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of change our mindset about, oh, what do we need to be doing?
Yeah.
To start growing our own vegetables and not relying on everything we produce. Maybe we need to recycle things more.
Yeah.
I could see the parallels between COVID and the catastrophic event. I could really see the parallels. It did take pretty much a catastrophic event such as COVID to pretty much shut down many of the places. And I know that it still has to be done as a collective also. Like, there's also areas outside of the U.S. that we're still open and all that, but yeah, I could see.
I think we probably have time for one more question. Let's see. Yeah.
Sure. I'm not going up because I think my question
questions more important. I was told to come up to the table.
Yeah, we have.
You're invited.
We have
Thanks.
Nourishment for you.
It's Iman, by the way, Jim.
Hey,
how are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you in person for the
yeah.
first time. One question I have, and one thing I've been grappling with since turn four, since the very beginning of my understanding and exposure to the real reality of what we're facing, was at first I went very external. I was like, crisis. And I was telling my housemates, like, factory farms and this is chaos. And as the months and now, like, getting on years have crept by, I have gone from external to way internal. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a while, so I've gone less. My roommate is invests in fossil fuels, like, actively. He makes money off of, you know, buying and trading stocks in the oil market. And at first, of course, my reaction was, well, you know, fossil fuels, like, blah, 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 like, this and that, environmental. And as time has gone on, it just doesn't work, right? Like, the conversations we have, I'm not convincing him otherwise, because ultimately he's making a lot of money off of this, and it's a driver for him. I think it's a reality that we have to be, like, mm-hmm. very aware of, because it's how we operate. Capitalist, global, whatever. So I'm curious to know your guys' thoughts on leading self from within versus shouting from the rooftops. Like, there's Eastern conceptions and philosophy that talk a lot about looking in as opposed to looking out. So it's kind of developing off this point. You know, is it fair to put a value judgment on someone else when I flew on a plane to go visit family in Kentucky 2 weeks ago, right? So I don't know. I'm curious to see what you guys think of that.
We flew in a plane to get here today.
Yeah.
And upon having the choice to pick any vehicle in a row of about 24, including some small cars, I chose the red Toyota Tacoma. And we talked
when
about
this
it.
Would come up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, but I think you can get past that, because if you walk a path of, or try to walk a path of justice and care, for others, then people notice and they see it. In between sessions, I got an email from a student 3 years ago that I didn't read it all because I didn't have time, but it was basically, thank you for all that you did, and I see it, you know, and I didn't get a chance to thank you. People notice when you do something. They might not tell you in the moment, mm-hmm. but you'll hear about it, either in words or actions.
I think what's really beautiful about what you're talking about is sort of that idea of modeling. So
yeah.
taking responsibility and sort of letting the way that you interact with the world and interact with others, kind of that might be sort of your form of activism, is just like, this is, I think there are, you know, spaces when pointing out injustices or things is necessary, and in your living room while you're housemate is doing trades online probably isn't the place, but, like, you know, there is this opportunity to sort of allow others to experience you and have that be kind of your way. Mm-hmm. Which I like.
Green, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Petra, we do a thing at the end of our podcast episodes where we ask a guest some rapid fire questions. We have some questions for you. So you can just, by virtue of the name Rapid Fire, just respond quickly, or as quick as you can. What's your favorite book?
probably James Baldwin's Giovanni's Room. It's
okay.
My favorite book.
Okay.
Beautiful book.
What's the last concert you went to?
A Modest Mouse concert in 2015.
You gotta get back out there, girl.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
They were good in 2021, I can tell you. What's your favorite restaurant?
I don't really think I have one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I know. Mm-hmm. I don't eat out enough.
How did you get to campus today in a red Toyota Tacoma?
No, I walked. I live on campus.
Okay. And in 2030, our community will fill in blank.
Be more sustainable and committed to the climate crisis.
Okay.
I love that.
Thank you, Petra. It is so nice to get some time with you and to be part of Turn this spring. Thanks, Kelsey, for coming down to Santa Clara.
Yeah, this was great. And thanks to all of our friends here.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
You all.
Thank you.
Thank you.